This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every episode, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I noticed there are a lot of owls loitering around your room there, so that must mean that it's time for an Orb of Mail.
Goodness, Chris, I didn't know that people on Deep Space Nine sent things by, you know, space owl. But yeah. Apparently they do, because they are all over my room and you should see the mess.
You don't remember that episode where Quark and Morn got in trouble for organizing those owl races around the promenade?
Wait, isn't that just like right off screen, you know, in Prophet and Lace? That was a storyline that got cut from that episode?
It was, and it was interesting too, because I remember they were going to dress the owls in lace. And, you know, that was something that Sisko said he just wouldn't stand for on his station.
That might have made that episode better.
maybe. <yeah. laughs> All right. Well, enough crossing the franchise streams here. So it's been a while since we recorded an Orb, but we're here with a mailbag episode today. It's actually been quite a while since we did an Orb of Mail. We've got some interesting topics to talk about here, Matthew, so let's just jump right into this. And our first letter is from listener Charlotte Warrington in the UK. And it's actually a very long one, and there are a lot of different topics in here. I was debating on whether to read this in small segments or read it straight through, because we're going to talk about some of the different ones. I thought it would be better to read it straight through and then circle back around. So Charlotte says, "Hello, I have been following your show for at least 6 months, and I have loved every moment of it. Your show has really brought out the Niner in me." I can hear a jingle there, Matthew, right? Bring out the Niner in you.
I like that. Yeah, it could be kind of like one of those great old gum commercials. Like,
yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, I love it. Bring out the Niner in you.
We need some of our musician listeners. Like, oh, maybe Andy Farber can do a little sax ditty for us to that tune.
Yeah, we could get the sax ditty, and then we could layer on some verse that we create, Chris, and we could sing it together. And yeah, that sounds like just a fantastic idea.
I like it. All right, so going on, Charlotte says, "Thank you for bringing out the Niner in me. And you got me rewatching Deep Space Nine. I found your discussion on Season 8 really fascinating. I have not read many of the novels, so it was interesting to hear you come up with your own ideas as well as compare them to the novels. The whole idea of Bajor joining the Federation seemed like exactly where the writers would go. As in Emissary, I found it seemed that was what Captain Sisko's task was going to be, and would really bring the series full circle, as the religious aspect had already been brought full circle. Myself, I would have carried on where they left off completely and have a several-parter, focusing on Jake. So a number of episodes with Jake, Cassidy, and Ezri, who are trying to investigate Ben's disappearance. So the three of them teaming up. As I really feel that Ezri never got enough time with Ben. I know Jadzia did, but Ezri isn't her. And I feel she would really make an effort to find her old friend. Yeah, definitely, Matthew, I know you agree that Ezri is not Jadzia, right?
No, she is not. Christopher Vaca got the opportunity in the Babel Conference. He shared with us some great clips of seeing the great Terry Farrell in Dallas at the Comic-Con I would have normally been at if I still lived there. I was so disappointed that she was there this year and I wasn't going to get to see her. But no, she is definitely not Nicole DeBoer. Those two are very separate people and both very beautiful women in their own right. So no, I would never compare the two. I would like to have one on my left and one on my right, though. I'm not going to lie.
I can see that. Heading into a holo suite.
My two Daxes.
Yeah. Okay, so Charlotte goes on. Like you both suggested, I would also have a Section 31 backline. However, when I thought back to what you leave behind, I was reminded of the female founder who went off for trial. The question is, what happened to her? That could bring in the Cold War aspects with the Klingons and Romulans, as they wish to punish her differently to the Federation. You would think that Section 31 would step in and either assassinate her or possibly take her in for experimentation. As Julian points out, the founders could be key to creating organs, etc. And I could really see Section 31 doing unethical and immoral things to the founder for the greater good. It's a really interesting point there that we're going to circle around on here in a minute. On the lighter side, I think the writers may have had a Miles and Julian episode where they went to the Alamo and reflected on their holo programs or something. I could see them doing a humorous episode out of it. I'm just picturing what might happen in these holo programs at that point in the series after they've already confessed their love for one another in extreme measures.
Let's not ruin the Alamo with that kind of storyline. I just don't think it needs to go there.
All right, going on, I also agree that Julian and Ezri may rush into a marriage. I think the ideas you had were very insightful. I could see in my head Worf coming to visit and confiding in Miles about the trial for Julian. As to an ending, I am not a writer, and with something like Deep Space Nine, I think your ideas of bringing in Ben and Odo are fabulous and still leaves DS9 open to possibilities like at the end of Season 7, where the novels and our own imaginations can carry on. I haven't gone into too much depth because it is something you can talk about forever, and I just wanted to address what you did. Well, Matthew, I would say if Charlotte considers this not going into depth, I think Charlotte needs to be a podcast host because it sounds like she could really, really talk on this for a long time.
I think so too, Chris. I feel a little bit insecure at this point after this letter, right. And I'm working on my resume as we speak. I'm just kidding.
All right, so she says, thank you very much for taking the time to read this, and thank you for your shows. I hope you carry on and keep enjoying making the orb. All right, so let's talk about some of the things she brings up here, Matthew. Bajor joining the Federation, I think, is pretty much a given there. But what did you think about having a number of episodes with Jake, Cassidy, and Ezri investigating Ben's disappearance?
Well, it really does sound like an episode of Three's Company, honestly, and I like that.
So who's Mr. Furley? Who's Mr. Roper?
I don't know.
Who's Larry?
I think
Garrick would be Larry.
Oh, really? Really?
I could see Garrick popping in from time to time, to sell them something.
Yep, that would be
great.
But
maybe Quark would be a better Larry, actually, because Quark would be trying to sell them something.
But, I mean, goodness, could you imagine a better, Three's Company? Unfortunately, Jake with Cassie, it's a little awkward because that's his, stepmom, so...
Yeah.
But with Ezri, it's a little bit different, so...
So Ezri would be Chrissy and Cassidy would be Janet, because Jack was always after Chrissy and Janet was always trying to stop them from...
There you go, that could be it, or... You could kind of redo it, and it could be Jake and Kira and Ezri, because Cassidy's pregnant at this point, So it's a little hard for her to be, you know, like doing all these things. Okay. So maybe Cassidy's kind of like the other maybe, woman.
Maybe Cassidy could be Mrs. Roper.
There you go. Yeah, that makes more sense. Yep.
So back into the realm of actual Star Trek, what do you think about having the three of them investigating Ben's disappearance?
I could really see this happening. I could see, again, Kira really being involved in this storyline as well as they kind of search for what happened to Ben. I could see it being a great kind of spiritual journey for Kira in general, you know, trying to figure out what's happened to the emissary and what the prophets are maybe trying to do through him at this point. And I can picture this really happening, and I really like her idea. She says, you know, we give Sirak a chance to shine, sort of a longer version of the Visitor, basically. And
I could definitely see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really, really like that idea. And just any chance for and what we talked about when we did that show, I think any chance for Jake to really grow closer to Kira and that friendship that they created throughout the war, and then now also being kind of bound together with you know, her emissary being gone and her friend, as well as his father being gone. I love this whole idea of this storyline of them trying to figure out what happened to Ben. And you know, maybe midway through the season you could get that thing where that's when Ben shows up to Cassidy and says, I'll be back sometime. I'm not quite sure mm-hmm. when, you know, so they can kind of move on with that storyline. But that would make a lot of sense.
You know, actually, as you say that, one thing that Charlotte may be thinking here, which would make a lot of sense in terms of what we talked about on the show when we talked about Ben coming back, would be the way in The Visitor, Ben keeps appearing to Jake over the years just for a short time. And so, like you just said there, it could be that Ben keeps appearing periodically to talk to Cassidy or to talk to Jake.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Maybe even throughout that season, you know, because we had talked about him maybe coming back at the end of the season, that kind of being the big bum, 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 you know, cliffhanger to get to season 9.
So we're going to do season... Well, there's another show for us, Matthew.
Yeah, so... but that's kind of where I would expect it to, you know, if you were doing this show and it got to this point, you can keep going with it with the storylines, having Ben kind of show up every 3 or 4 episodes till the end of this season when he shows up fully. It kind of reminds me of how they do Doctor Who a lot these days, where there's going to be a big hullabaloo at the end, and the end of a lot of the episodes are little tidbits throughout the season or kind of build towards it. So I could really see them kind of doing that with, you know, the whole Ben coming back and Jake and Cassidy, Ezri, Kira all being involved with trying to figure out what's happened to him or, you know, all of that kind of thing. So yeah, I really see that working really well.
Well, the next part of this, Charlotte mentions that having the Klingons and Romulans and the Federation sort of at odds with one another about how to punish the female founder could play in. With the Klingons, my initial thought is they would just kill her. But then I also think about how they like to send people to Rurapente. So you've got Kirk sent there. They were going to send Archer there. They could send the female changeling there, but she would have to assume the form of tools and carts and things, and that's how she would work in the mines.
Well, my thought there was that you couldn't really send her to that kind of prison because she'd just be able to escape, because she'd be able to turn into whatever she wanted, unless you somehow, you know, collared her and created the ability for her to not change form or something.
Well, we've already
like
seen a shapeshifter in Rurapente before.
That is true. Although they couldn't become anything. They could just become different humanoids as far as we knew.
Right, that's true.
So Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, when I think, though, to who's leading in the Klingon Empire at that point, you know, it's Martok. And I don't think that he is the Gowron type of Klingon anymore, where they would do that kind of thing. I think that he would very much be with the Federation and the justice they want served with the female founder, and the honor that is required for honoring what the end of the war was based off of, which is that she would give herself up and give them into their custody and stand for trial for her crimes.
Yeah.
So I think the Klingons would be very bound to that. Now, the Romulans, on the other hand, I don't even know what they'd do, because when we look back at all of Star Trek, there's very little that we really know about the Romulans from the series. And some of it's kind of conflicting, and so it would be very difficult for me to even consider what they might feel. But I think that's where some issues might come, and the Romulan, it could become a Romulan problem. Like, it could flare up after the war.
I picture the Romulans putting her in some harsh prison conditions and just interrogating her constantly, and they seem like the kind of race that would end up torturing her as well.
Well, they could just ask Garak how to do it, because he was pretty good at interrogating changelings.
True.
You know, he knew exactly how to torment Odo.
That is true.
Being able to keep her from changing form, that'll do it.
Well, this is, to me, probably the most interesting thing in this letter, and something that I hadn't really thought about before. The idea that the founders could be the key to creating organs, raising some sort of medical ethics issue for Bashir and Section 31. I think what Charlotte brings up here is probably the idea that Julian would want to approach it from an ethical point of view, and Section 31 would want to abuse it to maybe to do what they feel is right for Federation citizens, but without any concern for the ethics of it or what it would mean to the founders themselves. But just the idea of this shape-shifting property of founders being tapped into as a way to create organs for humans and other races within the Federation is kind of an interesting idea.
Well, you know, we do have Insurrection, which shows us that the Federation isn't above doing what it thinks is best for the most amount of people, with hurting the least amount of people. So, at least a part of it. And so, you know, that mission was sanctioned by the Council of the Federation. So, you know, you don't even have to necessarily go to Section 31, although I think with the mythos of Deep Space Nine, it fits very well to have them kind of be involved in that. And I can imagine a great storyline where the founder disappears from her holding cell with Starfleet Intelligence, and we find out that it is Section 31 that's behind it, and Julian has to go on a mission to, you know, recover her from them. And then, of course, you know, the great episode that could happen where he's being tempted to follow them and all that kind of stuff, really kind of bring that home. And maybe, you know, just maybe kind of be an episode that kind of brings the end to Section 31 finally, you know, really have Bashir be able to go there in the series. That would be pretty interesting. So I love this idea. I think it makes for amazing story ideas, just one after the other. You know, you could have a 2, 3, 4 episode arc here, really driving home and maybe putting the death finally to Section 31.
You can never kill Section 31 completely, Matthew.
That's probably true. Thanks for ruining my thought here, Chris. But you're right. That is a really tough thing to put to death. But I mean, it'd be really interesting to see them finally exposed, at least, to the entire Federation. That kind of thing, I think, would be really interesting. And the ramifications of that as well for the rest of the galaxy at that point, with the Klingons, at the Romulans, and everything like that. So Yeah, goodness. There's just so many storytelling opportunities when you bring in this rogue agency, and especially when you're talking about the founders and how much we could learn, you know, from them about their morphogenic properties and all that, and how we might be able to use them for something. It's pretty crazy. So
with Julian and Ezri, you picture them. Did we talk about this on the show? I don't remember them actually getting married. Do you see them actually getting married?
Yeah, I think I mentioned that I felt like that they would get married pretty quickly after the war. And, you know, mainly because you have gone through this whole thing. She knows exactly what can happen in life, obviously, with her and Worf, and how that was cut short, and that they wouldn't want to waste time, you know, just kind of playing around the game, you know, that happens with relationships. And I would see that happening. And then it would be really interesting that, you know, we haven't spent a lot of time with marriages on the show. And we were talking about this with Una McCormick the other day on Literary Treks with her new book, The Missing, because she has a storyline in there with Crusher and Picard and Pulaski, strangely enough. That if you haven't read it, it's really good, Chris. So they're just kind of talking about this idea of marriage on Star Trek and really being able to see what it's like. And we had that a little bit with Keiko and O'Brien, but they also kind of have the stereotypical relationship that TV kind of does. She's kind of bickering and with him and kind of nagging him, and he's kind of put upon husband, you know, that kind of stuff that happens a lot as the trope. So I think it would be really interesting to see Ezri and Julian and kind of have head-on Star Trek kind of deal with relationships in a way that it really hadn't before.
And hopefully it would be better than the relationship we get from them in the novels early on. Of course, if anyone wants to know what we think about that, go check out our Literary Treks episodes on Avatar, book 1 and 2 for sure, and maybe a little bit beyond that as well. And you can hear us talk about that. All right. Well, thank you so much, Charlotte, for your letter. Let's go on to the next one here. This one is from listener Jeff DeMerchant in Canada. And Jeff says, I would like to suggest a topic for the Orb. With the exception of the flashback at the beginning of Emissary, we did not get to see the Borg on DS9. What would a DS9 Borg episode have been like? How would Sisko react given his history at Wolf 359? Can changelings be assimilated? Borgify Jem'Hadar! I think this might be a fun discussion topic. So, Matthew, I think you and I agree. We've talked about this a little bit on iMessage before about we don't really want to see the Borg on DS9. But Jeff's question here is sort of imagining what would it be like if they were there. So, what do you think they would do with the Borg on DS9? I guess within the context of the series that we got, is there actually any way that you could have fit them in? Would it have even worked?
That's the thing that I can never figure out, is how they actually play into the series. I don't know how you put the Borg on Deep Space Nine unless do you have, you know, Borg from the 22nd century come out of the wormhole because they were exploring the Gamma Quadrant at that time. So, you know, they're a lost Borg ship. I don't know.
Maybe
could
the
happen.
Borg ship from Enterprise comes through from the past and comes into the future somehow.
Yeah. I don't know.
That would be a particularly good story.
No.
But just what you're describing, I'm thinking if we want to tie it in, of course, at the point that DS9 was shot, there was no Enterprise, so that didn't exist. But we could retcon it.
Yeah, you know. Or we could just blame it on Janeway somehow, you know, that she scared the Borg into the Gamma Quadrant because they were tired of dealing with her in the Delta Quadrant. I don't know. This is a really hard thing. Now, I was thinking about this. what if the Borg were on Empoknor? So when they went to Empoknor to get the power core, somehow the Borg were there. Talk about a really freaky episode. You know, like, it was already dark and creepy there, and then you add, you know, the zombies, basically, that right. the Borg are.
So the question would be, why are they there?
Right. I don't know, Chris. We're just imagining what it might be like. So I this is hard. I don't know what it would be like to have them there. Now, can the changelings be assimilated? I don't think so. I don't think nanoprobes would
be able
to work, at least at the beginning, on the morphogenic nature of the changeling. I think they'd be able to spit the nanoprobes out.
Yeah.
Now, Borgify Jem'Hadar, that's as scary as sin right there, because the Borg are already bad enough, but imagine putting the Jem'Hadar body for a Borg. I mean, talk about a wrecking machine.
Yeah. Borgify Jem'Hadar, that would be something to see. For me, I'm glad that they never used the Borg on DS9. I think what I've said to you before was actually that I would have felt that the writers were creatively bankrupt if they had gone to the Borg on DS9, just because they didn't fit into the story, and the Borg feel like they were great on TNG. They became very tired on Voyager, and it felt like a fallback. Like, when we don't really have anything else to do, let's do a Borg episode. And so if that had happened on DS9, I would have been pretty disappointed. I don't think that Sisko would have had any particular reaction that would have been different from other Starfleet captains, though, because what we see between him and Picard in Emissary isn't about the Borg, it's about Picard. It's about the fact that Picard was responsible for the death of Jennifer. Yes, he had been turned into a Borg, but the anger isn't directed at the Borg as much as it's directed at Picard. And so I think that Sisko's reaction to the Borg, yes, he was at Wolf 359, but I think that there are many, many people in Starfleet that would have had a strong reaction. And pretty much anyone, even if they had not encountered the Borg, would be fearful of them. And therefore, I don't think there is that much difference. I think, like, if you look at Miles and his experience with the Cardassians, you see a difference in how he views Cardassians and how other people like Julian or Kira or other people or even Sisko view Cardassians, because they've never directly fought against them the way that he had. And because the Cardassians aren't that zombie-like faceless enemy that you can't communicate with. So it's different there.
Well, I think that if the Borg had come to Deep Space Nine, a phrase might be completely different these days. We would not say that something jumped the shark. We would say something jumped the station, because I really think that's where we would have gotten to if the Borg had shown up on Deep Space Nine.
Now, I'm picturing Ben and Jake in their Bajoran solar cellar, and then coming up and then leaping over the station.
Yeah, you know, in the opening credits, you have the guys out there, you know, working in the EV suits. Yeah. So just a picture of one, you know, having the magnetic boots, running along the top of the pylon, and then releasing himself and jumping up and trying to make it to the next pylon. So, jumping the station.
It could be a new use for a runabout as well. You know, you tie some tether to the back of the runabout, and you pull someone like they're skiing, and then you zip them right over.
Yeah, that's just called space skiing.
Space skiing.
Well, yeah, you've never done that?
Yeah. No, I never had a chance.
It's really dangerous. You'd be really careful. Yeah.
All right. So thanks for your message, Jeff. And we have one more here, Matthew. This is from Brad Alexander. And he wrote in and, first of all, said congratulations on your recent nuptials, Matthew. And then this was after we finished the final arc. So I guess this would have been after our part 10 out of 9, I suppose. And he says that, I'm sorry to hear the final arc coming to an end. I agree that What You Leave Behind is an apropos title for the episode. I had a few thoughts on the first part that you did relating to the end of the Dominion War. He agreed that the paralleling of Cardassians to Nazi Germany was right on target, and said that on the annihilation of the Cardassian people, you are dead on correct regarding the people paying the price for the missteps of a corrupt government. As I have stated before, the various races in Star Trek seem to have real-time analogs in the world today. In TOS, the original series, the Federation represents the US NATO of the 60s, while the Klingons represented Russia-Warsaw Pact, and the mysterious Romulans represented the Chinese. Fast forward to the TNG era, and the Klingons and the Federation have a nervous sense of cooperation, similar to Russia and the US NATO, and the newly introduced races, the Cardassians and the Bajorans, had a very direct representation of the Germans of the World War II era and the Jews. And then he goes on to tell a story here about his wife's grandmother and her experience in World War II and how that parallels to what we talk about. It's actually a very long letter here, so we're not going to go into all of those details. But he goes on to say, with the female shapeshifter, because we were talking about her earlier here in the show today. So regarding the founders, specifically the female shapeshifter, I think it was a combination of factors that brought on the surrender. When Odo joined her, I think four things coalesced in her mind about the Federation. One, as Matthew said, they accepted Odo back after his sin of omission. Two, they had to agree to terms or the founders would die as a race. Three, the Federation, or portions of it, were ruthless enough to be willing to commit genocide rather than to be enslaved by them. Four, they had either not been aware of or not been able to infiltrate Section 31. And then also, Odo's good faith gesture of curing must have also helped. She could have at that point gone back instead of Odo and cured her people and done a Butch and Sundance style last stand, but honestly, I don't think that she could have guaranteed that either she or Odo would have made it out of the room, let alone off planet. Thus, at that point, the fate of the founders was sealed unless they agreed to the terms of surrender. So, any thoughts on those comments?
Yeah, I think the last thing that I think of when I think of the founder there, it does go to show the selfishness of the founders as a race, that they'll do anything to survive. And I think she's very aware that if she does not go back, or Odo does not go back to save the founders as a race, they all die. And then Odo and her would be the last ones left, because we have no idea how the founders work as a species, how they propagate, if they propagate, any of those kind of things. We would be left to believe that, you know, they would literally just be the last ones. And then if they ever died or something happened to them, there would be no more founders. There would be no more changelings. So I think that determination, that self-preservation really kicks in for her, and that's one of the main reasons for her surrendering. Also because I believe that she has Odo's promise that he would go back and cure the founders. So, I think there's a lot of great points there. It was there's a lot of stuff that you can just... That's what I love about Deep Space Nine. You can just sit and think about it, and you can keep thinking about it, and you just kind of, uncover more and more things.
So then Brad sent us a follow-up message to this one and said, okay, I should have waited until the end of the show to get all of my comments out, but I was listening to it yesterday. I have two other comments on your final comments. On the subject of Dukat, and this is a big one, Matthew, because this has been, I guess the discussion has died down now, but over the past few weeks, this has been a hot topic in the Babel Conference. We've had a long debate about Dukat and evil, and Kai Winn and evil, I guess, especially Kai Winn, right? That's where we went with the evil discussion. With Dukat, however, Brad says, on the subject of Dukat, he seemed to be the focus of all evil in DS9. It was he that brought in and made the alliance with the Dominion and started the whole war rolling. This in addition to the evil on the spiritual side with the Pah Wraiths. When Matthew said what he did about Dukat, I immediately thought about him bringing the evil both on the temporal side, the Dominion War, and the spiritual side, the Pah Wraiths' fire caves. Then I remembered back to what Spock said in The City on the Edge of Forever about time being like a river with currents and eddies, which is why everyone coming through the Guardian of Forever at that portion of history seemed to gravitate toward Edith Keeler. In the DS9 story, evil gravitates toward Dukat, the devil incarnate, as Matthew so eloquently put it. So I don't remember our exact discussion on that now, Matthew, but it's very interesting here what Brad brings up about The City on the Edge of Forever and how everyone gravitated towards Edith Keeler.
Well, yeah, I think that with Deep Space Nine as a series too, there were otherworldly things going on behind the scenes. There was a spiritual aspect to the story happening between the prophets and the pod wraiths, and spiritual battle happening as there's a temporal battle happening, and the mm-hmm. two very much correlate. They're not disconnected. Again, kind of referencing and very much in line with a lot of religions around the world, and specifically Judeo-Christian religions, of having the fact that the spiritual realm and the physical realm aren't distinct things or separate from each other, but it's all very connected. Okay. And so I think that makes a lot of sense for where we see Deep Space Nine play that out with those characters. And I was thinking a little bit too, you know, the other big evil that I really see in Deep Space Nine is the self-service, the selfishness, the willingness to do anything and everything to be the person in power. And I think when we look at Deep Space Nine, the two characters that really do that the most and are really guilty of that the most are Kai Winn and Dukat.
Right.
And we see how that plays out with both of them, how they...
And they gravitate towards one another.
Exactly, exactly. So it all does come together in that way. And I think the writers are really saying something, that a life lived for oneself and for one's own gain and power is ultimately futile, and it becomes fruitless. And the fruit of it is mass destruction, basically. It's a very, as Star Trek often does, as our friends at Mission Log would say, what are the morals, messages, and meanings behind this? Well, Deep Space Nine, I can't wait till they finally get to that show one day. But the morals, messages, and meanings behind so many of the Deep Space Nine episodes are big, vast, and amazing.
Definitely. So the last part of Brad's letter here talks about the final scenes in Vic's lounge, and he says both the one at the end of Bada Bing Bada Bang and at the end of What You Leave Behind, those cause a lump in my throat. And that final scene with Kira and Jake, arguably two of the characters with the greatest growth in the entire series, aside from Sisko himself. Jake grew from a young boy to a man, as you discussed, but Kira grew from an angry terrorist to mature and well-adjusted, as well as someone coming through the crucible of the occupation, commander of the station. So the two of them standing in the window of the station as the camera backs away was doubly poignant. That is hands down the best ending of a Trek series on the books, and I would argue, possibly the best show ending in television. I can't think of any better. Battlestar Galactica's ending was good, but still not even close to the end of DS9. So I definitely agree there. I mean, that's one of my favorite scenes. And as a final scene of a Trek series, yeah. I always loved the ending of All Good Things as they pull away from the ship from the poker table. But again, that's like life goes on the Enterprise, right? And not only does life go on, but now Picard has joined everyone. And then they sail off kind of happily for their next mission. But there's...
Until Deanna crushes the ship.
That's right. But there's a great poignancy and a great sadness, really, to this scene as they pull away from the station. And you know, I mean, I guess we have said this as we were doing our final chapter bit, but you know life's going to go on, but it's going to go on differently. And it's like someone took the book away from you. like closed the book and took it away from you and said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you anymore. But yet you know there are very important things that are still going to be happening to these characters, and especially Kira and Jake standing there in that window.
It's melancholy, Chris. I think that's really what you're left with. And it's so realistic to what we experience in so much of life. You know, the biggest moments and the biggest changes leave us elated at one moment and sad the next. You know, you get a new job or you move to a new place or any of those things, they're all surrounded by such great emotions of elation and also a lot of times melancholy because of what goes on in all of that. You know, you might get a new job, but that might be leaving friends at the old job. You know, you move away to a new city. Well, you get the experience of moving to a new place and all of that, but you may have left family in where you came from. So all of that kind of stuff. And Deep Space Nine, again, at the very end is resonating so much with life in general. And what I like about it is that there is a melancholiness and yet there's also a hopefulness to it as well. There really is a hopefulness because life on the station is continuing to go on and the life of those characters will continue to go on. We just don't know exactly how it will, you know. And the sad part was when that show ended, there wasn't going to be any more. There weren't going to be any films. And
that's why I said it's like someone took the book
away
from you. Yeah.
And then Avatar came out from S.D. Perry and we got it back. So
right, we got the book back. That's right. All right. Well, we have one last letter today for the Orb of Mail. And this is from Logan Fisher in New Braunfels, Texas. And Logan says, I have been a lifelong Star Trek fan, and DS9 has been my favorite part of the Star Trek lore ever since I gave it a full chance. I think that's the key, right, Matthew? I see that from people in the Babel Conference as well, who say they finally have decided to actually watch DS9 and give it a chance, and then you see how much they really get into it.
On the whole, yes, Chris, I really think that's the case. A friend of mine is still making her way through the series, and she's still not really latched on to anyone. But on a whole, I find that a majority of people who really do give Deep Space Nine a chance with an open heart really come away from the series, if not fans, ardent admirers of what the series was able to accomplish.
Yeah, they can appreciate
exactly
how it differs from the others, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Logan goes on to say, I have rewatched the series several times and love it more every time. I discovered your podcast a few months ago, and it has added even more to my DS9 enjoyment. I started from the beginning, and I am close to catching up with your latest episode and will soon begin to discover more of what Trek FM has to offer. Keep up the good work. P.S. I would like to suggest an episode idea, a discussion or commentary on the episode Starship Down. So, Matthew, what do you think about Starship Down? Is that something we need to do soon?
You know, Chris, I was thinking about that, and I think it is. One of the best parts about this is with all the myriad of topics, Chris, we also have 170-some-odd episodes that we to talk about as well. So there is plenty for us to do over the years.
Absolutely. And let's not forget that Starship Down was written by our good friend David Mack.
That is true. That is true. And so I definitely think it is worthy of our attention for a lot of reasons. And I actually really, really enjoy that episode. So
yeah, well, I think specifically in that episode, what's very touching, very moving is Kira's reaction to Sisko. You know, when Sisko seems to be fading away, she thinks the emissary's going to die. And, you know, for her on a spiritual level, you've got someone who you think is a god, basically, and he can't die, and yet maybe he's going to die, and that starts to put you into some spiritual turmoil as well, at least in your faith. I mean, it challenges your faith.
Yeah, definitely, and I think the another thing, Chris, on that is that it's the place where Kira really start seeing Ben as a real person as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first time that that really happens because, you know, she has the whole conversation with him and he's barely conscious, but kind of admitting how she's had such a hard time, you know, getting to know him and really feeling comfortable around him. And that is a great way for them to finally be able to bond and give her the opportunity to see him in a different light. So, that episode does a lot of really great things.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe we will do that sometime soon. I don't know if a commentary is best or a discussion, just because we can't really dig into what we just talked about right there if we're doing a commentary, I think, because it'll go by too quickly. But maybe. We'll think about it. We'll definitely think about it. So, Logan, thanks so much for your letter as well. So for everyone else, please send us your letters and your questions for the next Orb of Mail, which we'll do down the road a little bit. We like to gather these up. And of course, you can also come to the Babel Conference. We have discussions going on there every single day, and you can talk with us and other fans about it. But these aren't the only things we've been discussing here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at what else you may have missed on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I really, really, really hope that if they do that, they make Chang the villain because, you know, Captain Chang instead of General Chang or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, that just seems like the perfect way to go.
Earl Grey.
All right, Riker, we're promoting you to captain. I mean, you killed the last captain. We usually don't reward that. That's usually not a policy, but in this case...
Well, to be fair, he had spent some time on a Klingon ship.
The Orb.
But the Federation and Bajor as a member of the Federation would be helping rebuild Cardassia. And I could see, like, very much the relationship between the U.S. and Japan today. I could see the Federation and Cardassia having that kind of relationship moving forward.
To the journey!
Janeway has a very distinct pain noise.
Yeah, she kind of does.
You know what I'm talking
does.
About?
It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain.
The Ready Room.
He is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly.
He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
If I'm not mistaken, in any upcoming episode of Next Generation, we don't see full-grown golden retrievers running around the decks of the Enterprise. And I'm also a little worried that Captain Picard has never played with puppies.
Commentary, Trek stars.
But you'd rather see Red in charge than him.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because you really want Porn Stash to go down.
Yes, yes, you do. And that sentence out of context sounds really strange.
Literary Treks.
As great as Picard is and his Picard maneuver, I don't think Picard straightening his shirt is going to help him when he's going up against the Riker maneuver.
Fair enough, yeah.
So. Axanar, the official podcast.
The changes that we've made, the change to the nacelles and several other aspects of these ships to make them distinct and not the same ships as in Star Trek 2009.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. We're on SoundCloud. You can go to our website and you can stream from the page or download the MP3 file, or you can also grab the RSS link. And while you're there, on iTunes especially, also Stitcher, take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear what you think about the show. That also helps other DS9 fans find the Orb, however, because in the case of iTunes, star ratings and written reviews and subscriptions are very important for how you place in search results. So likewise, if you're just streaming the Orb through iTunes, if you're not actually subscribed to it, take a moment and subscribe as well. You'll get the new episode as soon as we publish it, and that does help us out. It helps other people find the show. Speaking of iTunes reviews, Matthew, we have several reviews since the last time we read some on the show here. Kid at Heart 33 left us a review sometime back, a 5-star review. Says, deep and brilliant. This is my first podcast ever, but it's amazing. Started with episode 1 and just finished listening to all of them. Each one is unique and enlightening. Fantastic work. So, Matthew, we were there first.
I don't even know what to say to that, Chris, but that is really, really awesome. I love that that was the case. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm glad that you wanted to keep listening to the end. What better compliment could you have?
That's right. We have another one here from Nunya Business. That's N-U-N apostrophe Y-A. Nunya Business. Love, love, love. And we went from 1 exclamation mark to 2 to 3 after each one of those words. We got 5 stars, and they said, I was originally a DS9 denier, but it is now one of my all-time favorites. I love Chris and Matt's review of the different characters and storylines, not to mention that awesome commentary on the best Star Trek episode ever, In the Pale Moonlight. You guys are rocking it. Keep up the great work. Smiley face.
Aw, smiley face.
Yeah,
getting the feels.
An actual emoji on iTunes. And we have one more here from Gerund08, who says, great show, and gave us 5 stars, and said, you have to finish watching DS9 to avoid being spoiled by the orb, but it's a great podcast to linger in the Star Trek universe. The hosts are well-read, low-key funny, and it's especially nice to hear an atheist and a Christian being so respectful of each other's points of view. Nice job and lots of content.
That's awesome.
Definitely. So thanks so much for those reviews. And for everyone else, again, leave us your review. That's a great way to help us out. Now, another way you can help us out here on the Orb and on the network is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find different milestone contribution levels that we've set along with the perks, but you can contribute any amount that you like. We had someone actually in the Babel conference recently who was asking about, you know, if they have to do a milestone level or if they can do a different amount. And you actually can type any amount that you want there in the field on Patreon. We just list different milestones as so you have an idea. You know, we have to be able to break up our perks into different levels. That's all. But what Patreon is it's a way for you to support us on a month-to-month basis. So please head over and contribute if you can. You know, every dollar makes a difference for us. We are a listener-supported network. And it costs us a lot of money to produce these shows and host them and distribute them. So if you love the Orb, if you love our programming, and you can help support us, we would really appreciate your help in keeping Star Trek Talk coming to you every day of the week. And we also have associate producers here on the Orb who we want to thank. And we'd like to say thank you to Norm Lau, who you can find on Twitter at Norm Lau, N-O-R-M-L-A-O. Norm is also the host of Warp 5, our Enterprise show. There's Ruth Ward, and you can find Ruth on Twitter at Reward64. And Lisa Stevens at Flip18 on Twitter. Will Wynn, who is our content coordinator here on the network, and you can also often hear him on Warp 5. You can find Will on Twitter at Will_Wynn, and that's N-G-U-Y-E-N is the spelling of his last name. And our new associate producer here on the Orb, but longtime supporter of the network, Renee Roberts, who you can find at Mares_1701 on Twitter. So thank you so much for all of you guys helping us keep the Orb coming to everyone out there. So, Matthew, at the end of our discussion there, I mentioned the Babel Conference, where we have a lot of discussions. So if people want to join us there, tell them about our little forum that we have there on Facebook.
Well, one of the best things about the Babel Conference is it is just for listeners. So if you'd like to join, just sign up. All you do is just ask to join, and either you or I, Chris, will allow you to be a part of the group. And we want that, and we need that, because it helps creep that family feel that we have going on in the group. And I think it helps foster great discussion. We want people to be there because they want to be there to talk about Star Trek and the things that are happening in our podcasts and in our group, and do it respectfully. That's also very important to us. And so that has been happening, and it has been stinking fantastic in this group. I think it's one of the things that I really haven't seen in a lot of other fandom groups. And so I'm really proud of that. And so if you just enjoy great Star Trek discussion and a lot of fun along the way, you're going to want to be a part of the Babel Conference.
Yeah, definitely. And another key to it is that everyone in the Babel Conference, these are listeners of the shows, because we only promote the Babel Conference on the shows, on the air. So it's not a group that you just happen to stumble across on Facebook. You kind of need to know it's there. And the result of that is that we have great discussions that are an extension of the show. So come on and join us over there. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it'll come right up for you. So, Matthew, when you're not, grooming your owls that are there in the room with you today, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, of course, you can find me at the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek. We frequently talk about Deep Space Nine books. In fact, just had Una McCormick on about The Missing and her brand new Deep Space Nine book. So you're going to want to check that out because it was a lot of fun. And then, of course, do the 602 Club about all things geeky that don't necessarily have anything to do with Star Trek, because we have a lot of Star Trek on the network. So we have one place for all of our hosts to go to really just kick back and talk about a different topic each week. So I hope you will join us there.
Has anyone guessed the name of Ruby's kids yet?
You know, no. She is tough to figure out, Chris. Those names, it's... Yeah, I got to give it to him. Norm keeps trying, though. So, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I hope somebody can be able to figure him out soon. So I think Norm might be close. I think she might be giving him some hints, but I don't know. Well, Chris, when you're not sitting around actively thinking about how you can bring back Deep Space Nine to the films or even just on TV, where can we find you?
Well, you know, I'm just actively thinking about how I can bring Robin Loeffler aboard Deep Space Nine.
Ooh,
in any sort of relaunch.
There you go.
So you can find me riding the train all the time. That's where I am all the time these days. Now, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And, of course, you can find me in the Babel Conference and on Facebook. Just come on, join us over there. And elsewhere on the network, you can find me on The Ready Room, where I'm joined sometimes by Matthew and all sorts of other hosts from around the network as we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series. So we do talk about DS9 on there once every 5 weeks. And I've started doing Hyperchannel again, doing the Star Trek news. It's very hard for me right now to coordinate time zones, but I am able now to quickly record news here by myself. So if you want to hear my thoughts on some of the stories going around in the Star Trek world, you can check that out a couple of days a week. And it's a very short show, you know, like a 10 or 15 minute show. And also, I'm still producing the Axanar podcast. So check that out if you want to hear what's happening in the world of Axanar. I'm not co-hosting anymore. Robert Meyer Burnett has taken over my chair there on the podcast. But listen to Rob and Alec. And they not only do they talk about Axanar, but they get in all sorts of discussions about Star Trek as well. So that's a good place to go.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.